the Promo News Podcast, talking music videos in association with Loop Talent. Welcome to another episode of Talking Music Videos with me, Robbie Litsky, and David Knight. And in this episode, we're talking to a director of photography making a significant contribution to British music videos right now. It's Rick Burnell. Rick has worked as a DOP on acclaimed videos for Willie J. Healy, Dry Cleaning, Sam Henshaw, and more. He tells us about the work he's been doing in the past couple of years, several with his long-standing collaborator, director Joe Wheatley. He explains his slightly unconventional route to becoming a cinematographer, and we started by asking him about the roots of his obsession with film.
I just remember like the video store being an absolute highlight of the week, going down and choosing a film to watch on a Friday night. I think you could have it for like the whole weekend if you ordered it on a Friday. And so you could get a film and watch it more than once. And I guess that's probably where the filmmaking kind of seeds got sown.
So where were you when you were using a video store and buying VHSs?
I grew up in a little town called Wivenhoe, which is near Colchester in Essex. And that's where I was renting VHSs and watching them with my cousins. And then I guess as I got a little bit older, 16, I went to sixth form college, Colchester sixth form college. So I was doing media studies, made my first music video at Colchester sixth form college.
Oh, really?
For the band that I was in. I wasn't really interested in cameras, like the, you know, the specifics of cameras. I was more interested in the content of the film. And then I went and studied film. Basically, I was in bands making like little films with my cousin and music videos. Like I say, this is probably 16 to 18. And then I was in a band and carried on being in a band, thought I was going to be in a band. But I kind of had a realization that I either need to be in a band or I need to work in the film industry or make films. And at the time, my gut decided filmmaking was the route to take.
Yeah. So so you went to your degree was Falmouth School of Art. Did you know that cinematography was going to be the route for you then?
No, not at all. I still at that stage. I was. I'm hesitating because I'm trying to I'm still not that interested in cameras.
Oh, okay.
the camera is just a tool, isn't it? Just for making the film. And I know that some DPs like, and they scare me. Like, they really understand the like mechanics of the camera, and you know, and they know everything about the camera and the ACs and all this kind of stuff. But like, the camera is something I've had to learn how to use in order to make films that I want to make. Like,
right.
So when I was at Falmouth, we had like, I didn't have a camera. I think I had a Handycam, like a Sony Handycam mini DV cam that I bought when I was there in the first year, because I thought that was a good thing to do, to have a camera when you're doing a film course. Mm-hmm. But it looked like shit. And, you know, recorded mini DV, and then we had like cameras in the media store that were shit, like Panasonic P2s, also mini DV. And then Adam Jones, who edits all of Joe Wheatley's stuff. He had a camera. I can't remember what it was, like a Canon, some kind of Canon mini DV thing. But what he had for it was this piece of glass that went in front of it, and it spanned these bits of glass to emulate film grain. And I think that might have been the first time that I started thinking about cameras when I started speaking with Adam and thinking, why has he got that bit of glass in front of his camera and what does it do? Even then, at uni, I didn't necessarily want to be a cinematographer. I was doing writing and I was making films. And then I suppose that kind of ended, to get through that part of the story, that ended with me, Joe and Adam creating our graduation film together. We realised perhaps that we'd make a better graduation film if we all worked together rather than us making one separately. Yeah. We approached our teachers who facilitated that, and we also bought the Canon 5D Mark II, and we shot a graduation film on that. And the tutors, I think, equally were like, how did you make this film? because they hadn't, they weren't used to that aesthetic student films.
So you made an excellent graduation film with Joe and Adam. Your introduction into sort of professional music videos was as a gaffer, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, I think there's a period of my career which, following university, I suppose, like, when I look back at it in even more time, I'll say I was just kind of struggling to find my feet, really, and find focus.
How did your entry into kind of like the lighting department progress into cinematography and becoming a DOP?
So I was working in the lighting department, and I had there was a time where I essentially got an opportunity to work in the lighting department when I just graduated as a trainee. And it wasn't really something I thought, I had no ambition to do that in any sense. It was more to work on films, to be on film sets and to learn how to make films. Working on film sets just seemed like, you know, the natural place to be. And I got on set first as a trainee electrician, and then gradually like moved up quite quickly. I think there was a culture in the electrical department when I started working of like, the electricians were often kind of not filmmakers, they were electricians. And then I think there was a bunch of graduates, probably like Tony Blair's kind of everyone going to university, that came out of university with like film and media degrees, and there wasn't enough jobs, or, you know, we didn't all become runners. And I ended up with some of my cohort also being trainee electricians.
Well, you learned something from being in the lighting department, and presumably that had an impact on how your aesthetic, the thing that you bring to your cinematography. Is that right?
I think so. Yeah, I guess so. Like, which is lighting, you know, when you're on set, and I had the privilege of working with some really amazing DOPs as an electrician, and then as a gaffer too. Working with those DOPs, I just, you know, they just fired and created this ambition that I wasn't aware of previous to working in the lighting department. I think I considered maybe a filmmaker was always a director. And then I realized that you can be a filmmaker and be a cinematographer. And that doesn't mean all cinematographers are filmmakers necessarily. There's cinematographers that are much more technicians, perhaps. But I guess the guys that I was kind of working with, had the same energy and excitement about film and cinema that I also had.
That's great. I think ahead, obviously, quite a while to kind of last year. I think the first one that maybe we want to talk about in detail is the Willie J. Healy video for True Stereo, directed by Joe Wheatley. Am I right in thinking that was probably filmed just before the COVID outbreak? It came out in April, right?
So yes.
So you filmed it, obviously, in the Highlands. Can you tell us kind of how that video came about, any of the conversations you had in terms of what Joe wanted to do with that video?
So me and Joe just worked together with a guy called Willie J. Healy, who Joe met through a mutual friend. And we just made a video for a track called Why You Gotta Do It. And this was kind of a new starting point for Joe and a new starting point for me. We previously had kind of been in some kind of collective, making films together, making films not together. And like, this was a really clear starting point where Joe was like, I want to be a director and find my own voice. And, you know, I didn't really know if that meant necessarily that I would continue working with him or not. But then he asked me to shoot Why You Gotta Do It, and we found our feet. And I still love that video. But then we made that video and Willie loved it, and the second one got offered to Joe. And I kind of said to him, like, the tricky thing is now making a better video than the first one. You know, you can't make this. He made a really good video for Why You Gotta Do It, and then you can't go and make something crap for the next one. This guy called Rich allowed us to shoot the first video on his estate. He's this like super nice guy, has this estate in the Cotswolds. And I remember Joe was sitting in my front room, and when Joe was kind of talking about the second video, and then it was actually my girlfriend that said, doesn't he have an estate in Scotland? And I think we all just like were in the room and were like, we need to go and make a video in Scotland. Joe went away and came up with the creative, and off we went. We got in a van, me, him, Willie, Rich, the guy who owned the estate. We had no money, so I put a call out on Instagram for a focus puller. And my friend Matt, who I'd worked with a few years before when I was gaffering, just got in touch and was like, I've never been to the Highlands. I'll come. So I called him straight away and just explained it in his bare bones. It's just to be like me, a director, an artist, and this guy from the estate and the artist's friend driving up to Scotland in a camper van with a film camera, a couple of rolls of film, we're going to go and make a film. And he was like, sounds wicked. So that was kind of in its bare bones what it was. Obviously, the creative lives is a different thing. And Joe came up with this amazing idea that Willie would be hunting himself.
Yeah.
In the mountains.
How do you make that happen?
A few parts to that answer, I think. First of all, when there's no money involved, you're doing it for love and for art. And that's really important, I think, that to put that at the front. Like all the best films I've worked on, I think, and the best things I've made have not really been about money. I think there was a small budget for that video, like a couple of thousand. I'm not sure on the exact, you know, breakdown, but there was enough money to buy three rolls of film stock. We borrowed a film camera from a friend. I just bought a film camera as well. So we took two cameras with us, a tripod and a floor bag. And like, you know, that, you know, if you look at the production value in the video, it goes on film stock and Scotland, driving to Scotland. I was like desperate to make music videos that I really loved. I'd been shooting music videos previous to that and having like varied success with a variety of directors, but I still felt like I hadn't shot music videos that I would have watched and felt envious that, you know, that I wish I'd shot that video.
Mm-hmm. What were the challenges of making that video, and what is it about it that makes you happy?
So starting with the challenges, I suppose, the physics of the video were like, we climbed a mountain to make that video. Like
that's a challenge.
Yeah, like I'm not a mountaineer, and climbing it, carrying a 16 mil film camera was, you know, a very real challenge. And it was slow and it was cold and it was wet, and we just had to grit our teeth and go on with it and deliver the creative, you know.
So this happened presumably over a couple of days, did it?
Yeah, we were there for 3 days. The first day we just got there and kind of just travelled really and ate and planned and kind of had a look around without literally climbing the mountain, but kind of had a look around. And then the next day we just set about doing it. And we had 2 days to shoot. We had the freedom of like, again, like not working to a kind of prescribed budget by a production company or anything like that. It was, it was kind of Joe generated a creative and we figured out how to make it. And whatever we needed to do to make it was what we needed to do.
Why is it like a pleasure?
Do I like it? I'd really like it as a film. I think it's got solid creative. It's charming. I think it looks great. Like the, you know, Scotland looks amazing. The location was amazing. The song's good. Willie's funny. And it feels like it landed as a video, regardless of, you know, whether anyone else kind of liked it. I felt like I'd done my job.
Following on from obviously your collaborations with Joe Wheatley, the TV Priest video for Press Gang, can you tell us a little bit about how that came about, and again just the origins of that project?
Joe was really lucky, and then me as well, I suppose, to be introduced to TV Priest. They had a single coming out called Decoration, and it was very similar to Willie. It was like I didn't even have an assistant for this shoot. It was just me and Joe, and we were working with the band. We made a very small, but another video I really like. And that naturally kind of allowed Joe to be asked to make the next video, which they did have some more money. They'd just been signed to Sub Pop. Press Gang definitely had a bit more money to it. And Joe had just been signed to Agile Films as well at this time. So We had a producer working with us, and the support of a production company. We had the privilege of shooting at Printworks. And then the song's called Press Gang, and it's about Charlie's granddad, who used to work on Fleet Street.
Sorry, that's the lead singer of TV Priest, Charlie Drinkwater. Yeah.
And Charlie's like full of like amazing stories about his granddad. And Press Gang, I think the track is a product of that, mixed in with a kind of reckoning with perhaps where the press is at now. And Joe built a creative on a kind of vintage illustration of the press, I suppose. He didn't want to get specified into a time or a place necessarily. It was a feeling, this cynicism towards the press.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a comedy in some sense. Like there's like, it's really cynical in its essence, and it's really serious. And Charlie gives this super powerful, angry performance, but they're like, it's not that far away from a comedy in some sense as well. Like some of the lens choices, like, and the microphones coming in and the wide angles, like there's a sense of humor to the video.
Yeah.
It's kind of a black comedy, or at least it's like you're kind of brought into a world without, you're not quite sure about him as a protagonist, whether he's the villain or the victim of the press. And there are like sequences where you created this like photo studio, a bit like, I think your reference was The Master.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we had money to hire lights for this one.
Yeah.
all this experience in the lighting department that I'd garnered over probably the best part of 10 years. And then I had the opportunity to work with a good director, with a good artist, and have some budget to hire some lights and have a lighting team. And Joe, I guess, also realised we could do some more setups, and we could do interiors and go hard in that direction. And so we were referencing All the President's Men and The Master and like amazing films that we've loved for years, and this, we just knew this guy, like Joe was like, do you remember this guy Paul who had all these old cameras, what if we did a scene in his broadcasting vehicle, because he's got like this vintage broadcast vehicle from
he's a guy who lives like in the wilds of Lincolnshire.
It's like a museum, it's like an unorganized museum where he lives. It's you rock up and it's just like like you say, a collection of old broadcasting equipment. He's not interested in film, he's not interested in digital, he loves analog visual production.
How specific. And
And he
it's a beautiful thing, frankly, isn't it?
He's an engineer, and anyway, without kind of getting lost in a rabbit hole of that, we just had this amazing location, and then that was like, because of COVID, that was me, Joe, and Charlie went up, and that was, you know, one day of shooting that was something we were super familiar with, like just me and Joe making a film, which is great. And then we had this other massive day at Printworks where we shot everything else.
You're listening to the Promo News Podcast, talking music videos in association with Loop Talent. Make sure to subscribe on your favourite platform to hear more in the series.
Okay, so about a month before then, you'd showed me this video. You're like, this is a new video for Dry Cleaning, Scratch Yard, Lanyard. And it's such a remarkable video for various ways, not least the way you shoot it. Give us a bit of background.
So Willie's manager texted me one day, you know, like, hi, Rick, this is Tim, Willie's manager. Are you around for a call? And I was like, yeah, of course. So he rang, and then he just said, like, explained the kind of situation he was in, which was that he was like, I've got this band, they're called Dry Cleaning, the track's amazing. You know, that stuff just goes straight over your head because you're like, everyone says that about everything. And anyway, he's like, I really love the work you've been doing with Willie. He's like, basically, I'm looking for a DOP because we have these directors and they're fashion designers, and the band really want to work with them, but they've never made a music video before. And I just want like a safe pair of hands of someone that I know, I suppose, that's going to be able to deliver a music video and help them realize it. So the fashion designers who kind of aren't really fashion designers, they're called Rottingdean Bazaar, and they're amazing. I don't know what they are, and I don't think they know what they are, and I don't think it even matters what they are. They just come up with brilliant ideas for various things, whether that's a fashion show or an installation or whatever. But anyway, these directors, fashion designers, and they've got this idea. He's like it's kind of like a like the band playing in this like model of a club. And he said, hey, hold on, let me just WhatsApp you. And Rottingdean had created a Photoshop image. So they'd cut out Flo's head and crudely Photoshopped it into this club that they'd taken a photo of, this club that they'd found in a curiosity shop that they'd bought.
And sorry, Flo being the lead singer of Fly Cleaning.
Yeah, yeah. And I just saw this WhatsApp message and I was just like, that's so brilliant. I just know that's a brilliant video immediately. And I was like, I'm 100% in. And he said, hold on, there's another image. And it was a reduced version of that image photoshopped onto a shot of UB40 playing in a studio. And I was like, that's brilliant. But that was it. And you know, there was no treatment, just these two images and Tim calling me saying, do you want to come and help me with this project? And so, you know, it unfolded from there.
But then there's an additional thing where it sort of draws out and you find that it's actually then performing. And of course, my thing is it done for real?
Yeah, it's real. Like there's... That's what like blew up in my mind when I saw these two images in WhatsApp of Flo's face in the club and then the club, and I just thought, there's an amazing shot in this video where the camera slowly pulls out and reveals this, and I just thought, I just know that shot is just going to be one of the best shots. Yeah. That I've ever done, and I still love it. Like, it still gives me goosebumps when I watch it and just think, like, wow. And I don't know, there's something really, really magic about that, isn't there? The way it changes the world and reveals the band. And there's something really cool about, we talked a lot about how to light the band, how much the band should kind of be in the video. I think there's some obvious coverage that's missing from that video, and I think it's so the much better for it.
What were the challenges of shooting that, the Scratchyard Lanyard video?
That video started off again with like in the same budget arena there, because I think it was their first single and they didn't have any money really. But Tim was like, he's like, you know, we'll try and do everything. So we had the film conversation and that, you know, that became a thing. And then we all decided that'd be a good idea to shoot on film. And stuck to that. And then this shot, as it came out, I think I had this realization after one or two calls that to achieve that, we need a dolly with a jib, because the camera has to move down to create the nice frame of her, you know, like to create the balance in the frame, the camera has to move down. Yeah. And you know, you could probably do that with a technocrane or something. I've never worked with one of them, but like there's probably like super kind of expensive ways of achieving that shot. I knew we weren't there. I remember him ringing and thinking, oh, I need a grip and I need a dolly. I need like a peewee dolly. And so I rang him and explained the situation to him. And he was like, oh, you know, we don't really have any more money. And then I managed to convince him that the peewee dolly would be like £200 or £300 or something. And then got him to sign off on that. And then I had this nervousness because I didn't have the courage for some reason to ask for a grip. And then I've been working with this guy, Josh, who he's a really great young assistant. And I just called him up and like I rang Matt, who I've been working with, you know, on the Willy videos and did Press Gang and everything. And I rang Matt and I explained the situation to him. And I was trying to convince myself that we didn't need a grip to make that shot happen. And I have to give them credit. Like Matt and Josh both were like, mate, we'll figure it out. You know, like we'll make it happen. Like it's not that hard, is it? Pushing a dolly and Josh on the jib and we rehearsed it and we laid the track and we did it. And
it looks great.
I'm really happy with it. Like,
So
the a couple more recent videos, you've done two so far for Sam Henshaw, which was Still Broke and Grow. Do you remember kind of the origins of those videos in particular?
Yeah, so the director of those videos is a guy called Jim Pilling, who I met a few years ago. He was making some content, I think, for L'Oreal or some kind of cosmetics brand, and I ended up like doing some rigging on something in the electrical department. I'd just shot a short film. I'd just shot my first ever 16mm film, and kind of I was waiting for the steady test to come back, which is something I've never experienced before. And then I remember having that, and then Jim was like, "Oh, what are you watching on my phone?" And I was like, "Oh, it's a steady test." But I realised he was a director, and I sent him some work. And at that time, I was trying to like find new directors to work with. Sent him a thing, and then didn't hear anything for ages. Eventually, he rang me up and was like, "I watched your stuff, and like I've got this project coming up." And we ended up going around the world with Adidas and shooting some content for them, and it was amazing. And that, you know, it's those experiences that allow you to connect with people, I suppose. And me and Jim started a friendship then, and it still exists today. And then Jim's been working in content and doing kind of fashion and so on. And he dipped his fingers into music videos, but I would say he's not your, you know, he's never been signed to a production company or anything like that. That's kind of that typical route of music video directors, I suppose, where you like start as a runner and do that kind of thing. He made a video for Benny Sings like a couple of years ago, which is really cool. And Sam Henshaw saw that video and reached out to Jim.
Right.
And just said, like, "I really love that video." I'd been shooting a lot of music videos last year, and Jim got in touch and was like, "I've had this guy get in touch with me and I think it's a cool track." And Jim's very selective about what he works on. Anyway, so he said, "I think it's cool and I think there's a good opportunity here. And if you want to work on it, it'd be wicked to do this together." So then that was the starting point for Sam Henshaw.
There's been two videos that come out so far. There will be more. But you tell us about the process.
So, yeah, there's a narrative that exists across this. But what's been so interesting working with Jim is our references have been pretty broad and wide, and how we span the two videos we've made so far. They feel quite different, I think, those videos, but they also exist in the same world in a way. Mm-hmm. And that's been a really interesting kind of point of conflict for us, is like making sure the videos are related and they don't feel so adjacent that they could have been, you know, made by different people or just have no relationship to each other, because they do have a relationship to each other. But we also drilled into very different references for both videos. Like Still Broke is mostly on Dolly and on sticks and with zoom lenses. The camera's often static and fixed. And the second video, Grow, is very handheld. And so there's totally different fruit to be found in those two approaches, I suppose.
So what was your influence or reference for Still Broke, or references?
So we were looking at a lot of Spike Lee's movies, and then there's a shot that we've honoured Spike Lee with. I don't know if you remember, like, it's one of the last shots.
Yeah.
So he's like a huge influence on that video. And like, similar to Dry Cleaning, it's like sometimes, again, like, keep talking about this like landing of stuff. And we went on the recce, and Jim was like, I think Sam had sent Jim a Calvin Klein advert that had a double dolly in it, and then we explored it a bit more, and Spike Lee's, that kind of seems to be a signature of his, and we watched a ton of them, and we did the recce, and when we realised where that shot was going to be, we were just like, this has got to happen, you know, and it ended up being like a 40-foot track.
Wow.
With a grip, and we had to build a platform out from the house, because there were steps going down and then onto gravel. And again, that was one of those kind of moments where you just think, oh no, I just like, I hope they find the money for this. Because
yeah,
I don't want to appear totally moronic, but can you explain what a double dolly is?
Sure. So a double dolly is where you have the camera on one dolly, and then you have your subject, like the protagonist or whatever, on another dolly, and those two dollies are attached on the same piece of track. So as the camera moves, the subject also moves, but without referencing any of that equipment, obviously it kind of feels like the subject is almost floating.
Yeah.
And it's attached to the camera in a sense, like, or at least it's the distance stays the same. So it has a kind of a strange effect. We used it in that video as a kind of liberation tool. There's a narrative point in which the character realizes perhaps he doesn't need to be in that situation, and the double dolly just floats him out the house.
So where did you shoot it?
Yeah, we shot that in West London, like on the outs in suburbia, like somewhere near, it's like a golf club near Watford. It's kind of one of those strange locations where you like walk in one room and go, wow, this place is amazing. And then we walk in another room and they're like, so we've done this room up much nicer. We hire this one out for weddings. And we're like, oh God, this room's disgusting. So you have to, you know, be really selective and like that. The planning of that video was to the T. Every shot in that video we shot on the recce and discussed before the shoot, and the schedule was super tight, and that was a real kind of learning experience of execution, you know, where we know exactly what we're going to do and we just need to execute it and make it look nice and get performance and everything, you know. That was which I love working that way. I love that kind of knowing what's happening.
Did it require much lighting?
Enough. Like I had a gaffer and a spark and a small lighting package, and again, like the budget didn't allow for kind of anything so massive, but enough to shape it and get exposure. And I guess that's where my experience as a gaffer comes in, is that I'm pretty good at being economic with lighting packages and knowing how to cut and where to cut and help. You know, a lot of the videos I've made in the last couple of years, like the ones we've talked about, haven't had very experienced gaffers because there hasn't been the budget for them. So I guess I've been working with them, with like, you know, some really great guys that are young and get stuff quickly, but they're not like, you know, we're not talking about working with gaffers that have been around for 15 years.
Sure, of course. I mean, that's obviously, that was also shot on film.
Yeah.
And it does look really great. I mean, they all look great, obviously, but you think about, well, grading, do you have conversations with colorists about, you know,
all the time? I feel like the colorist, as a cinematographer, the colorist is your one of your most important relationships. They can ruin your work, or they can make your work look amazing. And you know, that's how important it is. You know, I wouldn't understand how you could not be interested in the grading process as a cinematographer. Yeah, I'm really lucky. I guess I've had to learn how to work with colorists, and also what colorists kind of land in a place that I'm happy with. And the colorists on the videos we've been talking about, Jason Wallace and Tim Smith, are amazing guys. Like they're so talented, and they have such an understanding of image making and what images are and depth. And like the Still Broke grade is just, Tim did an amazing job on Still Broke, finding depth in the images that I wasn't even aware of. And, you know, I think his modesty might say, like, no, you did an amazing job, man, and so on. But, like, as a cinematographer, like, the kind of anxiety I was talking about earlier, where you feel like, oh, no, there's that shot where maybe this thing didn't quite work out. When you have a good colourist, it's often that becomes not a problem, and they can, you know, really overcome issues that might exist in the raw negative.
What do you have coming up? Is there anything you can tell us in terms of kind of what type of projects you have coming up or anything you're particularly excited about?
I just had an amazing experience working with a director that was new to me called Lucrecia. I think you guys had recently on the podcast, and we made a video for a UK rap artist. So I've spent a bit of time in the commercial world. And then I think I've got my first pilot to shoot for a BBC drama, and that's about a band. Yeah, so it's kind of, I guess, nicely tied into my music video work, and I think that's maybe what the director saw potential in. But that's
exciting.
Yeah, I'm really excited by that, see where that goes.
Well, that's very exciting news. Rick, thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This has been the Promo News Podcast, talking music videos with David Knight and Robbie Litsky, in association with Loop Talent. Our thanks again to Rick Bernal and to Lucy Price at Loop. You can find links to the videos discussed and to more work by Rick in the description of this podcast, and also at promonews.tv, the home for the latest in music video creativity and production news. And follow the Promo News Podcast to hear more of our conversations with leading creatives in the music video industry. Bye for now.